Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sam Pizzagatti, who is a veteran Labor journalist and associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's the editor of the online newsletter Too Much, and his most recent article out on otherwords.org is The 10 Greediest Americans of 2011. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sam Pizzagatti.
Thank you.
And the 12 greediest Americans that you've found, I'm sure there's an awful lot of candidates out there.
Well, I mean, that's the real problem here. This list is somewhat arbitrary because there are hundreds of people we could have chosen. We could have looked at the list of hedge fund managers, for instance, top 10 of the top 10 earners in 2011. Last year, they averaged $1.75 billion each. All 10 of them made over $440 million. So you could make a case for just the top 10 hedge fund kingpins as the 10 most greedy. But what we tried to do was take a broader view and make the case that you don't have to be have a billion-dollar income to make the list of top 10 greedy. You do have to be insensitive and ruthless, and I think everybody on our list is.
Well, particularly starting out with number 10, the head of the CEO of Walmart, Michael Duke, who takes home $18.7 million, but he cut what was called premium pay, which meant for work.
That's right. Walmart workers for years and years got extra pay if they had to work hours on Sunday. CEO Michael Duke eliminated that premium pay for Sunday labor, and he also ended the Walmart profit-sharing plan with workers.
And and reduced their health care benefits and cut staffing levels so low that, according to Retailing Today, there are no employees left to round up the shopping carts in the parking lot.
That's right. And for all that, Michael Duke took home $18.7 million.
So just to, though, Sam Pizzagatti, just to relate it to what you said a minute ago about the hedge fund managers not being on the list, I would think that there is a difference here in as much as although Walmart are screwing their employees, they do hire a lot of people. And we know about the jobs mantra that's out there, and particularly in this election year, we'll hear nothing but it. Hedge fund managers don't create jobs, do they? They just extract wealth.
That's exactly right.
I mean, they probably have.
You're making a very good case for putting them all on this this list, and certainly I couldn't argue against anybody who did that.
Right. Well, I just was thinking, you know, they probably only got a secretary and a few analysts, and that's it. You know.
That's right. And much of what they do, much of the wheeling and dealing they do, involves stripping companies, laying off workers, and then breaking apart the pieces and selling them off for profit.
Well, let's talk about number eight here. Robert Iger, the CEO of Disney, since we're here in Hollywood. I guess Michael Eisner set the example, right? Taking home, I think that guy took home over $1 billion while he was.
Yes, and in 1 year he set a CEO record with over $500 million.
Right.
So against that yardstick, Robert Iger looks kind of modest. But we need to look beyond that modesty and see that this past year he was pressing hotel housekeepers at Disneyland to pay more. A year more for the health care at the same time that he was pocketing $28 million for his labors.
And in your work, Sam Pizzagatti, again, you're a veteran labor journalist and an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. editor of the online newsletter Too Much, and we're talking about your article out at otherwords.org, The 10 Greediest Americans of 2011. In your work, and of course the division in wealth, the disparity in wealth is in the U.S. is one of the greatest, I think. Only Israel is probably, I suppose, Saudi Arabia, but nobody knows what goes on there. But it's way up there.
Yeah.
And what drives this? And they, of course, anybody that criticizes this are called the indulging in class warfare. But the truth of the matter is, there is a kind of class warfare out there that's being imposed upon everybody, and they've accepted this idea that somehow these corporate people are incredibly valuable. They see themselves as being incredibly valuable, even though they go from, you know, a company that builds nuclear submarines to a company that builds bicycles. They have some peculiar talent that I find quite amorphous. But what is it about the psychology of these people? Why do they feel, you know, because in Japan and other countries and in Europe, the ratio between the CEOs and the workers is nothing like it is here.
That's right. And indeed, I think is that the situation today in the United States is very, very different from the situation 50 years ago in the United States. In 1966, Walt Disney, you know, the actual Walt Disney, when he ran the Disney Empire, he made 108 times more what the housekeepers at the Disney hotels were making, 108 times more. Bob Iger now makes 781 times as much as his housekeepers. And if you look at it, if you look at the situation, I think there are two major factors that explain the difference. And those two factors are institutional. Back 50 years ago, we had a very steep progressive income tax in the United States. Until 1964, income over $400,000 faced a 91% tax rate. Now the comparable tax rate for that figure is 35%. And then also in back 50 years ago, we had a very strong labor movement in the United States. We had almost a third workforce carrying union cards. Today, that figure is 7%. If you look at those two institutional factors, I think that explains a great deal of why CEOs are now making close to 800 times, in Bob Iger's case, more than their workers, instead of 100 times as they were years ago.
Well, Sam Pizzicati, the New York Times has been doing some good reporting recently. They had a front page story on how corporate America is sitting on tons and tons of cash, and what they're doing is, instead of investing in R&D and plant and equipment, they're buying back their stock, their company stock, which then reduces the amount that's out there, raises the price, and makes the CEOs look good so that they can then in turn claim these huge bonuses. And, you know, at the expense of laying off more and more workers because they're not
That's
doing
right.
anything.
The term of art in corporate America for that is buyback, the stock buybacks. And these stock buybacks may be the ultimate expression of corporate executive arrogance.
And again, it's all acceptable somehow that we have created this super race of extremely valuable people that require these enormous riches compared to the people who do so much of the actual work on the shop floor. I'm absolutely mystified at the kind of moral and social aspects of this that are inexplicable.
Well, it's a very closed fraternity at the upper echelons of corporate America. The boards of directors of Fortune 500 companies are primarily composed of CEOs, either active or retired, from other Fortune 500 companies. So it's a tremendous party of back scratching that goes on year after year after year at the top of corporate America in our CEO executive suites. We really need to end it, and there are a number of ideas that are floating around of how we can begin to turn the situation around.
Well, number five on your list, of course, is Lloyd Blankfein, Sam Pizzagatti, the CEO of Goldman Sachs. Just before the meltdown, he took home a record, I believe, $68 million in bonuses.
Yes.
And but now his pay is $19 million and rising. And he was a big player in the subprime meltdown. And one of the things I find so disgraceful about this situation is that you have millions of people who are aspiring to join the middle class, the very middle class that you were talking about a minute ago. They were victims of this fraud that the Wall Street has played on them, and they've been kicked out of their homes. So you have this really disgraceful situation where you have millions of homeless Americans' families. And you have millions of empty homes. And these people still could service a part of the mortgage, even though they were tricked into ridiculous mortgages. They could still service some of the bank debt, and yet they're not allowed to. What's the explanation for that?
Well, I think the explanation of that is sheer economic power translating into sheer political power. The bankers like Blankfein and his colleagues, his fellow plutocrats, have essentially been able to insulate themselves from investigation. There has been no major investigation of what's gone on in Congress. There's been nothing comparable to the Pecora Commission of 1933, which exposed the Wall Street fraud that helped lead to the 1929 crash. Nothing like that at all. There's been nothing like what happened after the savings and loan crisis. Excuse me, in the early 1980s. At that time, federal regulators turned over to the Justice Department for prosecution hundreds and hundreds of cases of banker fraud. So far, the regulatory agencies have turned over zero cases to the Justice Department for prosecution. The only explanation for that is that essentially the wrongdoers have been able to buy themselves protection.
So Sam Pizzagatti, again, a veteran labor journalist, a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's the editor of the online newsletter Too Much, and his most recent article out at otherwords.org is The 10 Greediest Americans of 2011. We're skipping around here a bit, but number three is Larry Ellison, the CEO of Oracle. He's collecting $77.6 million, and he's already worth $35.9
billion. $39.5. He's the fifth richest individual in the world, and most of those near $40 billion have come from his holdings of Oracle stock. So the question becomes, what could he possibly need another $77.6 million for? That was his compensation for the 2011 fiscal year. Usually the rationale for these sky-high executive pay packages is that the executive needs an incentive to perform. Well, he's already got $39.5 billion. 77 adds less than 0.2% to his net worth. So what possible explanation could there be other than sheer avarice for arranging that sort of payoff?
Well, he doesn't show up to the office very much, does he? He's off sailing a lot of the time and playing tennis. I didn't think he was even an active CEO, but it does, we have the impression that the Silicon Valley people are a little less greedy than the Wall Street types, but I guess he goes against the grain there.
That's right.
Well, the one, though, that I find truly takes the cake in terms of being a disgraceful human being And that's Don Blankenship, the former Massey Energy CEO, who's responsible. His greed and absolute disregard for workers, largely responsible for the 29 miners who died at the Upper Big Branch coal mine that he owned. He sort of wears American flag shirts and ties and blusters around as a true American. He pocketed $38.2 million from 2007 through 2009, and then $34 million in 2005. And he retired with a $5.7 million pension and $12 million in severance. And recently, a settlement was made over the deaths of these miners. The successor company that bought the mine from Blankenship paid out, I think, $300 million or something.
Which came to $1.5 million for each family, which was less than one third of what his retirement pension is.
And so far he hasn't been touched.
Right, and it's unlikely that he will be touched. Most observers don't see a prosecution because there's no, quote, smoking gun linking him to it. But what he did, he created a management culture at Massey Coal, where the only thing that counted was increasing production, don't worry about the safety regulations. And in fact, the managers at Massey kept two sets of books. One set of books was a phony set of books that they showed when safety inspectors came around, and one was the actual set of books. He was the CEO. He was responsible for creating that culture, and he's going scot-free after 29 miners died.
So just in closing, the one that also gets at my outrage is Alan Mulally, the Ford Motor CEO, because the federal government bailed out Ford and General Motors. And after, losing $30 billion over 3 years, he's been rewarded now $56.5 million in stock. And then a month later, he gets an additional $26.5 million. That was last year.
They announced that the spring that he made $26.5 million for the most recent fiscal year, and then they've given him a $56.5 million stock, new stock award. Ford has returned to profitability, and it's essentially returned to profitability on the backs of its workers. In 2007, he forced a new concessions pact on Ford workers that reduced the entry wages to $14 an hour, essentially cut those wages in half.
So they're basically attrition. They get rid of the older workers who are expensive, and they bring in the new ones for pennies on the dollar.
Exactly.
And his salary amounts to 910 times the pay of the entry-level Ford workers.
Yes. Yes, and again, back in the 1950s, that differential, that ratio between top auto company CEO and average worker was less than 50 to 1.
And you and I and all the taxpayers listening are the ones that essentially rescued Ford.
Well, in Ford's case, the bailout was really not so much the factor as the sacrifices that workers made. GM and Chrysler both got the hefty bailouts, and because they got those bailouts, for some period of time their executives were under some strings to keep the executive pay in check, but that executive pay over there has also increased over the recent past year.
Well, I stand corrected, but it still doesn't change the picture.
That's right. It's still an atrocious picture of pure avarice.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Sam Pizzagatti.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Sam Pizzicati. He's a veteran labor journalist and associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's the editor of the online newsletter Too Much, and his most recent article out at otherwords.org is The 10 Greediest Americans of 2011. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the euro crisis is far from over.
So excuse me, mister, but I'm a mister too, and you're giving mister...